This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751, or send in your question through the website www.beatyourgenes.org. Good evening, everybody. This is Nate G. with the Beat Your Genes podcast. So if you guys ever wanted to be a fly on the wall in a therapist's office, I know I have, and that's actually one of the reasons why I've started this podcast. Today, we actually have an opportunity to do that. Today on the show, Dr. Lyle is going to be talking with a caller about how to deal with a supervisor who's constantly micromanaging everything that he does. So a lot of common traps that people fall into to remedy this could be things like engaging in long discussions with them, trying to train them differently, maybe even waiting it out. And then in some cases, even just blowing up and getting into big arguments. So these are pretty noble attempts, but I can imagine they're pretty frustrating that even with our best efforts, this kind of behavior is going to continue. So during the course of this on-air session, I want everybody to listen as Dr. Lyle first establishes rapport with the caller, and then he carefully uncovers evidence of this manager's longstanding behavior. And then finally, once the caller has clarity on precisely what's happening, a reasonable solution starts to become clear. And this is what we call beating our genes, is once we understand and have clarity on the situation, we can now start to find what's the most effective solution for our happiness.
How you doing?
Not too bad, sir. How are you doing?
Very good, good. Hey, well, listen, thanks for the call. And
sure.
So I don't know much about your situation, so just sort of fill me in and give me the broad strokes of what you're dealing with.
Okay, so let's see. About 6 weeks ago, I started a new job at a company, and this is a position that I've been doing now for at least about 10 years. In the general field of my work, I've been doing it for close to about 23 years. And I found out that very, very quickly, actually, that my new supervisor is actually quite a bit of a micromanager. Now, the unique situation for me is that we don't have like a common office or anything. I work remotely, so we don't have, you know, direct contact on a daily basis. But I can sense that he has a tremendous need for knowing what I am doing at any given moment throughout the day. And so he has actually requested certain things that I think are a little bit, crossing some boundaries, if you will. So for instance, that would be, requesting that I copy him on every email that I send to anyone else in the company. Also maybe an itinerary of, kind of what I'm going to be working on throughout the day. So, actually to be a little bit proactive, I started putting together a list of things I would work on throughout the day, because I kind of looked into the area of, you know, people who are micromanagers. And try to figure out what was driving them. And, you know, the recurring theme was the fact that they really needed a lot of information. So I was trying to provide a lot of information. And so I put together, like, you know, today, you know, 8:30 in the morning, I sent out an email. Hello, sir. Here's what I'm going to be working on throughout the day. And then just recently, he actually sent my email back to me with the number of minutes allotted to each one of the tasks I identified in my email.
So, wow.
Yeah. And also for my job, I have to travel quite a bit. And so I buy plane tickets, and then you know, like over the weekend, he says you could have bought them cheaper, and gives me a list of pricings from other vendors and things of that nature. And it's just, it's pretty remarkable. So,
right.
I'm just kind of wondering, what are some, I guess, methods to dealing with a person like this, and maybe what's driving them. The interesting thing is we actually did meet face to face for a while.
Yeah.
And he came off as much more, you know, not as in your face controlling, but
right.
When, you know, when we're not together in the same room, you know, via email, the level of control seems to jump quite a bit. So, yeah, so I'm just kind of curious as to what I can do to actually deal with this, because, you know, my attempts so far have actually made, I think, things maybe a little bit worse. So, and, you know, I just kind of interested in the psychology of people who are like this, because I'm more of the mind, you know, you can tell me what to do and I can figure out how to do it, you know, because I have been doing this for 23 years. So I probably know what I'm doing. But, you know, the dictating not only the what's but the how's is a little bit overbearing, and actually it's kind of demeaning in a way too. So, and like I said, I just started at the company. I would like to stick around. Everyone else that I work with are seem to be very reasonable, decent people. I just got this one individual, and unfortunately I report to him. So that's
right.
That's kind of the broad brush of my issue.
Yeah. My first question would be, how many reports does he have? How many people are in essentially your position relative to him?
I think it's like two other people in total.
Oh, not much.
Okay. Right, right.
So, that's not a lot of reports. Does he have production that he is supposed to be doing independent of supervising the three of you?
He does. He has his own, you know, it's kind of like tech support sales position. And so he does have his own accounts, but also the other salespeople in the region, you know, have their own accounts, and he's kind of responsible for the total combined number for everyone as far as, you know, sales and growth in the region and all that. So,
okay. So are you one of those people, or are you doing something different?
Something a little bit different. So I work with sales guys, but I'm sort of the engineer. I'm the tech support person. So
I
am a shared resource amongst these three individuals. So.
Okay. So he's actually, so let me get this straight. So he's actually like a sales manager kind of a guy.
Correct.
Okay. And then he's got two other people that do what he does, but each of them independently have accounts that they service, but he is sort of the head of the group, so that their numbers impact how he, quote, well is doing his job.
Right. And then I help all three of these guys kind of do their thing and try to make stuff happen. So.
Right. And these other two guys, your relationship with them is entirely different than that with him.
Yeah. I mean, there were more coworkers, not, you know, superior, subordinate kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. And with them, because he's doing the same thing that they're doing actually as a production person, do we have any sense that he's micromanaging them, or do we know?
It's interesting. One of his other reports says, oh, he doesn't micromanage, but their personality styles are extremely similar. I'm not sure if this guy doesn't even, you know, very type A kind of people.
Yeah.
The other guy, he's probably like in his early 60s. He might have a few more years left to retirement, so I really don't think he cares all that much. So,
okay.
He's like, you know, he likes to talk. He likes, you know, he likes to hear himself talk. So just let him talk. Don't let it bother you and stuff. And, you know, I guess it's a lot easier to say that when, you know, you already have the house paid for and you're 3 years away from retirement, as opposed to my situation where I've probably got about a good another 20 years or so to go. And
right.
Same thing in the house payments too. So my financial right. situation a little bit more precarious. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. So we have to, yeah, I think, so in other words, this older guy, his attitude is that this boss isn't so bad.
He's, you know, he believes that, you know, he's bad, but I mean, as far as the micromanaging aspect is
right.
concerned, but I think he believes that there's no repercussions for maybe ignoring his advice, you know, or
right.
his suggestions. Yeah, that's what I'm kind of getting, you know, yeah, he'll send you a nastygram email or he'll give you a nasty phone call or whatever and just blow it off. It all just, you know, water under the bridge, that kind of thing. And
that's
I just
right.
started, so I'm not very comfortable with going
yes.
that route. So
no,
yeah.
I understand. That makes perfect sense. But yeah. but what's interesting about it is that this guy's behavior, the boss's behavior, is reasonably consistent for at least that one employee, and so it's the same tactics. So we're seeing, which of course you would expect because obviously this is personality.
Right.
But an interesting thing is the fact that the behavior has persevered even in a long-term relationship with this employee. So
yeah, that's true. That's
right.
True.
So that's
yeah.
in other words, it's nothing about that. This is not. It's likely that his behavior, he is more anxious now. This is all being driven by anxiety. And so this reminds one of, for example, an anorexic, anorexia nervosa, or it also reminds one of obsessive compulsive disorder, people that are washing their hands all the time and things like this. This is the same level of edgy anxiety. If you essentially stop an OCD person from washing their hands, they're going to be mighty upset, okay? Or if you don't wash your hands, you know what I'm saying? If they say, hey, would you wash your hands? I just saw you, you know, pet the cat. And you say, no, I'm not going to wash my hands. They're going to get angry, okay? And that anger is, it feels very unfair to them that you are essentially risking their health by not washing their hands. It seems entirely reasonable to them. And now you're going to touch everything in the environment, and then they're going to touch what you touched, and then they're going to have whatever disease the cat had on it. And that's
right.
what's driving this. So irritability and anxiety go hand in hand. Okay. And, and obviously anorexics drive their parents and everybody crazy with how many calories are in the food are we sure? And does that have any oil in it? And let's measure it. And why can't I take a scale to the restaurant, find out how big the potato is? This is again what you're saying. So this guy is OCD, is essentially what we're looking at. And if he's not formally OCD, it doesn't really matter. It's exactly the same personality. And this personality, as should be obvious, it's a perfectly useful place in middle management. So if you were trying to find a perfect middle manager, you would find somebody that's OCD. And you would just turn them loose and make life miserable for everybody around them. But you could relax if you're above them. Because you know, hey, no problem. I know that everything's going to be in ship shape under Jones over there because Jones is a freaking nut. Right?
Yeah.
And so that's what this is. Okay. So all that you can really do that I can see is that you can do two things which you're going to be doing essentially simultaneously. And the first thing is that we're going to continue to – I'll tell you what we don't do. What we don't do is we don't tell the OCD germ phobic that we're not going to wash our hands because they will escalate. Okay. Their pain is much, much greater than your pain. And so his anxiety that you will be, that he will be found out that you misused the company resources because you spent $13 more on a hotel room. His, like, he is so anxious about that, that somebody could review his little reports and that they could say that actually, why did this guy stay at a Hilton Garden Inn when he could have stayed at a Days Inn, for God's sakes? We know those are $13 cheaper. Okay.
Oh, we just had that conversation, actually. It's amazing that you just bring that up. So that's
yeah. So that's what's taking place there. So just to understand that what you're dealing with is a very, very anxious person. And what essentially OCD is this is hyper-conscientiousness. And what conscientiousness is, or hyper-conscientiousness, is the overestimation of the worst-case scenario. So this guy is walking around. To him, his life looks like a minefield, okay? It's like at any minute somebody could say, hey, how is that – what's that IT guy doing? He's working remotely. You can't see what he's – but you know he's probably sitting at his desk and eating Fritos and watching, you know, reruns of the Brady Bunch and wasting the company's money. Oh my God. See what I'm saying? And so this is what's raging through this guy's brain is what's happening.
Yeah.
Now, this doesn't, you know, believe me, in a special version of hell, if I ever do anything really bad, I will be wind up in hell and I will be supervised by somebody with OCD. Okay. That's what it is. Now, what do we do with OCD people? Well, I can tell you what their spouses do, and that is that they mostly wash their hands, and then once in a while they get so frustrated that they finally blow up at them. You know what I mean? They say, no, I'm not doing it. And then there's a big fight, and then divorce is threatened, and everybody's upset. Then everybody has to calm down for a few days. Then we go back to normal, and then you're washing your hands again.
Yeah.
Because basically their craziness is more potent than your irritation. Okay? Is really what it amounts to. Because they feel like their life is at stake. Okay, so this guy feels like his life is at stake. He's got a whole bunch of little causal dominoes that go in a line that if he loses his job – because they put him in this position, and then if it turns out that he wasn't looking into, you know, the hotel bills, and then that means he's going to lose his job, and then that means that he's going to lose his house, and that means that this, that, and the other, and then pretty soon it's him and his kids and his wife and everybody else in his family is starving to death, and they're on the corner of, you know, Pico Boulevard with a cup of pencils in it. Okay, I mean this is the dude.
Okay, yeah, I can. You can definitely see
that's happening. Yeah, probably when he's in person and he's looking at you, he's less anxious because he knows you're not ripping off the company when he's got his eyes right on you.
Right, right. Okay.
So it's like, hey, I can see this size for this 5 minutes because I can see the guy with my own eyes. And so, nothing bad can happen. And he's also looking at you and, you're making all the kind of responsible noises, and you've got like an appropriate amount of low grade anxiety, you know, because he's quote the boss. And so you're exuding some deferential cues, which tells him that he's not in trouble, but if he uses his terroristics, you're likely to respond.
Right.
Okay. So that's more or less
that's comforting.
What is happening. Now, so what we can do is we're doing what you are doing, which is that we essentially try to trying to recalibrate him into reason, which is what our first instinct is to say, look, you're crazy. You're unreasonable. I've never had to put up with crap at this level before. I'm a completely responsible professional. Just leave me alone and it's going to be done fine. Just relax, for God's sakes, get off my back. Okay. But you can't do this and it's a worthless enterprise. So instead, what we want to do is we want to flood his circuit with data. Okay. So we want to be smart at setting up your little systems like you are, to constantly be feeding him a never-ending stream of evidence that you are not wasting the company's money and that he can't be criticized.
Mm-hmm.
Right now,
okay.
Over some time, what may happen is that he will, you know, his anxiety will be too great, and he will occasionally blow up, like he's obviously done at this older guy, and he will get unreasonable at the level of, you know, counting each calorie in the potato. And what happens if I cut the potato eye out? Does it now have 364 calories or 366? You know, I got to worry about that. Okay. So occasionally your own fastidiousness will not satisfy him and he'll be upset. And mm-hmm. your natural reaction is, you know what, you need to be recalibrated. I need to hit you over the head with my anger to let you know that you're way unfair. Okay. Mm-hmm. The problem is it won't work because he's OCD. So
yeah.
he will simply escalate back, and it's a trap. You know, he's not trying to trap you. He just simply cannot tolerate the anxiety. Okay. I've never heard of a boss sweating over a few dollars in an expense report. Okay, so that, you know, there's wacky people. But I have heard of OCD people who, you know, were in production and would negotiate over 3 cents on the tacos, you know, for 100 people. And that
right.
I do know about. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very similar to a lot of OCD things that you're going to see. So what do?
Mm-hmm.
We flood his circuit. We when he goes off and he's anxious, we don't particularly defend ourselves. Because all it will do is it'll escalate and it will activate greater anxiety because he will feel like you and he don't see eye to eye on what is fair and reasonable. And therefore he
mm-hmm.
now cannot trust you to be monitoring yourself in a way that he would be okay with. Okay. So when he goes off, our thing is to say, oh gosh, now I see, sorry. Okay. Now this seems like
uh-huh.
outrageously wimpy, but it's not. We're dealing with a nut. And so our obviously what we're doing is we're trying to not have a fiasco in the new company while who you are and how you do things, you know, and your professionalism and abilities are more completely assessed by other people in the company so that we can be angling to get the hell out of that section. Okay, that's
mm-hmm.
obviously what we're up to. How big is the company?
It's pretty small, actually. And to be honest with you, I think they're kind of getting themselves positioned to be sold off here. Guess like
right.
2 to 3 years or so.
Okay.
And then with that will obviously come some changes to the organization. So,
right.
you know, if it can tough it out that long, there's probably a pretty good chance that there'll be some shifts and whatnot.
Right.
So
there'll be some major mm-hmm. changes, and you very likely wouldn't wind up under him. The
right.
Let's ask about this question. How easy or difficult is it for you to find similar employment with a similar company?
Let's see here. Unfortunately, there were just like two of them I just turned down not too long ago. So
that's okay. Like, no problem. Okay. All right.
There might be another one coming up here pretty soon, though, that I've heard
okay.
about. That might be, let's see, like 4 to 6 months out. So.
Right. Okay.
Mm.
So it's possible. And, yeah, I would say that I would say in general, these people, they never change. So this is an intractable
mm-hmm.
situation. There's no amount of goodwill you can build up with him. He will never trust you. And, you know, don't take it personal. The issue is that this anxiety is extreme. And and so he's going to be just a miserable person that will, of course, never lose his job. Because he will be overkilling every little detail and the person above him can relax because they don't have to worry about him. They've got seven other
right.
reports they're taking, and the one report they don't have to worry about is this guy. Okay?
Right.
And they don't
yeah.
really care what happens to people under him. That is not their problem. I would say I think you're in a situation where you're sort of running a cost benefit on leaping from the known crazy to a new situation. If there's a new
mm-hmm.
job that comes up, and the new job is statistically very likely to be better, but not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So in
right.
some ways, I mean, it sounds like this company, do you feel like the compensation is solid and good?
Yeah, I mean, compared to all the other competing offers, they definitely came in on the high side, which is kind of what led me to take the leap. And, you know, with my conversations with this guy over the phone, I mean, pretty much standard kind of conversations. But,
right.
you know, that was before I was reporting to him, and I don't know if he didn't want to reveal a few things in the process, you know.
Yeah, I sort of
yeah.
knew he was a nut. Believe me. When OCD, when some OCD guy starts going out with a hot girl, he knows he's OCD,
yeah.
but he doesn't reveal it. She's going to be washing her hands, okay? Or there's
okay.
going to be a problem. So yeah, so that's what went down here. He neglected to inform us that he is half crazy, and it. You have to look at the whole, you know, whatever the new – now, when it comes to this company possibly being sold, is there any upside in it for you in terms of stock or anything like that?
Yeah, if I do stick around for that 2 to 3 years or whatever, I should
yeah.
be invested in some stock. And if the price goes up considerably, it actually might turn out to be a substantial sum of money towards the end.
Potentially serious money. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so this is a fancy lottery ticket. And
mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. And so you sort of have to run the cost benefit and does it look like a 2 to 3 year target is reasonable, or is that pie in the sky?
Oh, whether I can maintain my sanity that long?
Right.
Fail. Yeah, basically, yeah, it's going to be a dollar to sanity kind of trade-off here. We haven't had a real, you know, throwdown, you know, knockout, drag-out kind of fight yet, and that's what I'm
– Right.
You know, so far everything's just been kind of little cuts here and there. But,
sure.
And I'm hoping I can keep dodging the bullets as time goes on, but kind of to your
yeah.
point, there just may be that one moment where it just ramps up and –
Yeah.
wrapped around the axle about four other things, and then I give him a phone call at the exact wrong moment, and suddenly, you know,
yeah.
I'm getting near full or whatnot. So, I'm hoping to avoid it, but we'll see. In the meantime, I will probably still keep my eyes open, you know, because so for the stock, there is a vesting schedule associated with that.
Yeah.
So, now, if I get another offer here coming up, then I will make sure that that also includes the vesting schedule. And if that is 6 months out, I'm only going to lose like 6 months worth of vesting here, which is basically nothing. So, in the beginning,
yeah.
it's a lot easier for me to make a shift if I get a similar
right.
offer. As time goes on and they put those golden handcuffs on, it gets
right.
financially more and more painful. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's either get out soon or stick around and hopefully I can take the blows, you know, but
yeah, I think my strategy, every situation is different. You'll have to be weighing the cost benefit, but in general,
mm-hmm.
I mean, my attitude would be you get out as soon as you get a similar offer, because, you
mm-hmm.
know, unless this is a real big shop where you can move laterally to somebody else's team, we're under
right.
this freak for maybe 3 or 4 years. Okay. What
yeah,
could
I know.
Be two
yeah.
to 3 years could be 4 to 5 years, and then you're in 2 years of misery, and you got three more coming. And
yeah, I mean,
and
the,
so
yeah,
yeah.
The only upside, they have a unique technology here, and I was kind of hoping to get skilled in that,
yeah.
And then maybe I can go out there and be a consultant for it, after like a year or two or something like that. So that
right.
was the only other sellable thing for it. But,
yeah.
I can't do 2 years without sleep. You know, that's just
right.
not going to work for me. So,
right.
Right. Yeah.
I would say
okay.
One last bit of advice when you're thinking about if he blows up and all hell breaks loose, I want you to keep this in mind, and that is that the people escalate in their anger when they are essentially determined that they have to win. They could be extremely anxious and fearful. And their life's on the line, at which point they can become essentially hyper-adrenalized and enraged. Okay? Think about a mother and her child is being attacked by a dog or somebody, a human or something like this. And so the tremendous fear drives tremendous emotion. So this guy could, get extremely anxious about something. Very upset and therefore really come after you. However, if we understand kind of as we're trying to get it in your mind now, if we understand that this is actually not the same thing as being a disagreeable bastard, okay? He is not a disagreeable bastard. He's a hyper-conscientious nut. That's a different thing. Now, it's for an awful lot of intents and purposes, they can look the same, okay? And if they have power over us, it feels like it's kind of the same, but it's really not the same. And so if you look at the guy and you understand him, either way, actually, when you're in a hierarchy with a person like this, if you're in a hierarchy with a person who's disagreeable, it's very hard to talk yourself out of being really, really pissed off back at them, okay? In other words, even though you know it might not be the right thing to do, but in some senses it may not be the wrong thing to do either, because they are the only way to get in any negotiation at all is to push back and to tell them that they're being unreasonable. But with a hyper-conscientious, anxious person, it's not quite the same situation. And so when you realize, think of a little kid who is screaming because they don't want to leave their mother and go to school. Okay? And they're like really, really upset. And you're frustrated because you want to just drop the kid off at school and leave. You know what I'm saying? And it's just clinging to the mother and it's just raising hell. And the thing is, you can be frustrated. But it's very useful to realize, no, this is just an extremely sensitive, super anxious child, okay? And what we're going to do with that super anxious child, even though you want to swat it and throw it in the car, what you do is you just try to calm it all down and be reassuring, okay? And when this guy is actually, if he ever goes off on you, it's going to be fine. Because we will have predicted it and we will understand it. And your response, even though part of you will be thinking, this is an ass, and what I need to do is to fight fire with fire, push some anger back because he's being unreasonable. You know what I mean? So part of your mind will be making that inference. But from this discussion, and as we just behavior and you learn and you get this firmly in mind, you'll realize, no, that's not really what it is. He's not particularly disagreeable. He's mild. He's moderately disagreeable, which is useful. But really the big issue is he's hyper-conscientious, hyper-anxious. And so when he starts yelling at you, it's like a little kid who's lost it. Okay? And so now we just speak very calmly and we reassure and we say, God, I know you're upset. I know I need to take care of this. I'm with you. No problem. I will take care of it. You see, if we talk like that, the anxiety, the panic will come out of the system. Okay? So we won't get World War III with him. we will get a 5-alarm fire that we can quickly de-escalate down to a 2-alarm fire. Okay. So that's how you survive with the net case. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, mm-hmm. you're looking to get a ticket out of there as soon as you can.
Okay.
That's right. The real solution, because there's no fix.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, initially I just kind of thought it was just establishing a basis of trust, but it, you know, in looking at some of my other coworkers who've been with them for years, it doesn't seem like that ever really gets established. So I see your point.
I think that it probably gets established a little bit. So his anxiety probably 15%, you know what I mean, after a good solid year. But the truth is that, you know, a nut is a nut is a nut. Circuits are circuit, parts are parts, and this is what you got. Okay.
Okay. No, I appreciate your time, and kind of wish it was a little bit better story there, but I guess it is what it is. So in the meantime, I'll just flood his circuits with data and try the de-escalation in the meantime, and then
and keep in touch with
resume.
Your
head. Yep.
You got it.
we'll do, sir. All right. Hey, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
We want to thank our listener for calling in and talking about a situation. Caller names may be changed to keep things confidential. And if you want to call in and talk with Dr. Lyle for our podcast, feel free to email me at beatyourgenes@gmail.com to schedule a good day and time. Or if you want to do a private session with Dr. Lyle, you can reach him at his website at esteendynamics.org. Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe. Write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.